The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it. You must be 21 or older. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts hears "Let's Ride" and panics because he thinks it means we're going to the vet. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes. And on this beautiful, glorious, perfect Tuesday afternoon, I am joined by the one and only Dominique Foxworth. Dominique, how you doing, man?
I'm great. I know you're tired, but I also know it's a fatigue that you're happy to have because you won your Super Bowl last night. Like, you, right? This was game, if you could pick any all season to win, because you're not anticipating like making the playoffs or making a deep run. This was it. And now you're going to lose the rest of them and get Bryce Young.
Yeah, I said that. But then, of course, my fan brain immediately kicks in. I'm watching Geno Smith going, you know, 15 for 16 or whatever. And that lizard part of my brain that's starting to fight the rational part is like, maybe, perhaps. And I hate it. I hate that about myself. There's so much like to talk about with this game. So just to remind folks, Dominique and I are doing this show every Tuesday, and we're going to be recapping Monday Night Football. And then we're going to talk a little bit, or a lot actually, afterwards about some of the things we liked and didn't like from the weekend. But we're going to start with Monday Night Football. I also want to say something. Because we have this new show format, I would love to hear what you guys think of it. So I haven't asked for reviews in a while, but if you can let me know how you feel about it, how you feel about the guests, let me know guests you'd like me to have me you'd like for me to have on Thursdays. Leave it in the reviews. I would love to see what you think. Dominique, everybody starting with the 64-yard field goal.
Yeah.
I feel like it's hard to start anywhere else.
Right.
But it's also really boring because everybody... have you found a single person on Earth who thinks that was a good idea?
No, because not only was it the wrong decision to kick the field goal, they went about the kicking of the field goal in the wrong way. So, like, if you're going to kick the field goal, still preserve the time so you can potentially get the ball back. But I think we could go a slightly different direction in that let's not criticize Nathaniel Hackett for that one decision. Let's criticize him for the whole game of poopy decisions and sloppy execution and goal line fumbles out of confusion and like all of it. Like, you got Russ, you got talent everywhere. The defense played pretty well, or very well, actually. And you end up with three trips to the red zone in the second half and 3 points. And it was just a mess. And then the kicker. So if you want to not talk about the fact that they didn't choose to kick, then we can talk about how they saved all their timeouts and decided to start calling them after you wasted 50 seconds and missed a field goal. And now he's like, maybe we can get the ball back with 15 seconds left. Let's start rattling off these timeouts now. Can't take it with us.
Let's focus on the Broncos side of this. You know, when we were talking about this team and what might derail them or what the potential pitfalls might be, something I think like kind of came up, but only tentatively, and perhaps is something that we should have spent more time talking about, is the fact that none of these coaches have any experience. I was watching that and I was thinking that the, you know, offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator, this whole staff, and then with Hackett, of course, being first time head coach, is so inexperience. And I heard someone this morning on TV say, why didn't someone come up to Hackett and tell him not to do that or give him advice? And I was thinking, like, well, there's no seniority there. Like, there's Mike Munchak's not there anymore. There's no one there to really tell him what's what. And I think it showed not only in the final decision making and the clock management, but the penalties, the fact that the defense, I thought, though they played really well in the second half, came out really flat in the first half. Some of the offensive execution errors. I kind of hate the fact that we all have to, I've thrown out like 20, like we and straw mans in this, so I don't want to do that, but that's what, I'm in Bristol. So like I'm marinating in the takes right now. But you know, there's this discourse right now about whether teams should be playing in the preseason, and it's silly on some ways, in some levels, because we just saw the Vikings, who I'm going to talk about later. They didn't play in the preseason. They look freaking great. So I don't think it's like a league-wide thing. But I did feel watching this team in particular with this coaching staff and all of the differences there and the new quarterback, like maybe they should have played in the preseason. Because, you know, they just look so discombobulated.
The issues, though, are not with players playing in the preseason. I think that, as is the case in many problems in our lives, is we pick one variable and we're like, that's the reason why. When actuality, it's probably a bunch of other things that you can't control. So, like, Aaron Rodgers sucked this week because he didn't come to voluntary workouts and get the people. Like, I had to fight that fight today, this morning. Like, stop it. That's ridiculous. So, in this particular case, there's an order of operations, and normally teams have that sorted out. And when you are having calls that don't get in until they're late, so you're rushed and inevitably fumble on the goal line because of it, it seems like there is – sorry, what's that?
Oh, no. I will say, as far as the calls go – and the play clock ticking down, seemingly throughout the course of the game, Russell Wilson was having struggles with the play clock. That's a Russell Wilson thing. That is a, you know, I was watching that from the other side in the field and being like, oh, I know this song where, you know, they're waiting until the very end to snap it and it really like pushing it. And at times you're very confused why that's happening. So I hear you on sort of the coaching side of it and all that.
The goal line part certainly seemed like that was not a rest thing. That felt like a play call thing. But we can put that aside and go to like the end of game decision. So every team I ever played for, we ended every practice doing 2-minute drill. And the point of that was not just so the quarterback could practice calling the plays or we could practice on defense not huddling and getting our calls across or whatever. It was also so the coaches could practice their scenarios. And Nathaniel Hackett is the son of a coach who's been around this game long enough. And I would be willing to extend him some bit of latitude because he's a first-year head coach. I'd be willing to extend him some more latitude if something happened in this game that never happened before. This was a run-in-the-mill, like, end-of-game situation. It's like a rookie quarterback, like, missing on a 5-yard out and us being like, oh, no, it's cool. It's his first game. Like, no, that's what you do.
Sorry, I keep interrupting you. I'm sorry. The level of difficulty was not high, which makes me think the solution is that we don't need to have this preseason discourse about the players. We need a preseason for coaches where we as the audience, get to watch them handle clock management and, like, make decisions in real time. That's what I want to watch.
They need it for themselves, not just for our amusement, but for themselves to get prepared for the season. Because it's clear that he froze. It wasn't fight or flight. He just froze in that situation. And what made it even worse for me, and the same way you said we, and you feel like ESPN, like I don't know, clone person. I kind of feel like the ex-athlete person by saying as a player, because as a player, I found it really uncomfortable to listen to him try to double down and defend a bad decision. What I want to hear as a player in that situation is, that's on me, guys. And he doesn't have to say that to the media. Maybe he can say it to them privately, but like, I blew that. You're out there putting your bodies on the line, giving me everything you got. I appreciate that. I blew it with the bad decision. But instead, he got up there and tried to argue that he made the right decision that is, like, obviously wrong.
Yeah. We've all seen the numbers about McManus and the fact that nobody makes him. It would have been a record, obviously.
I'm sorry. I'll cut you off back. It's not just that the numbers were there. It's also that he went about kicking the field goal in the wrong way. Like, he didn't even call the timeouts before.
The timeouts were actually worse than the final decision in many ways. How did you actually feel about Russell Wilson? So, setting aside Hackett, and, you know, everybody agrees with that. Like, what did you think of him in this offense? How did he look to you? What struck you about his play?
Yeah, I thought the offense in general was, like, up and down. Russ ended up with 340, which is a lot of yards. He seemed like he didn't really have too much. I think there were questions about how good is he really right now? I think he's still Russell after watching this game. The red zone issues, they can be solved. He put a couple of really, like, he threw that pass to Judy, which was a terrible throw. But yeah. Judy was incredible and made something out of it. But he threw some other, like, really accurate. The one in the corner of the end zone where the tight end was barely out. Like, he did yeah. some Russell things through the course of the game. And I was like, all right, he's fine. As long as they don't ruin this, he'll be okay.
It's exactly what we've been saying all offseason. Like, it's going to be the Russell Wilson offense, and it was the Russell Wilson offense. Like, he looks exactly like he did in Seattle. I will say, I did think he was a little bit off throwing deep, including the aforementioned underthrown ball to Judy. He missed a couple of throws on go balls that he usually makes. But otherwise, I thought he looked fine. He looked accurate, largely made good decisions. The only thing that, like, I would be concerned about as a Broncos fan is what we saw was a continuation of something we've seen over the last couple of years, which is no mobility. I mean, yeah. he ain't moving. I mean, Geno Smith outrushed him, which I don't know if there was a bet for that, but I would not have placed that bet. And I think that's something that's going to probably continue, frankly, because he's, what, 33 or something, 33? Like, you know, I don't really see that him turning back the clock there. But, you know, largely, like, from just to kind of wrap this up with the Broncos, like, they should have won this game. They outgained Seattle by 200 yards. They lost. They went 0-for-4 in the red zone. They had the fumbles. I don't think the defense is going to be that undisciplined again in terms of the penalties. They'll figure things out. They clearly figured things out as the game went on and the pressure looked better and better. So, like, I feel like this is probably the worst game they'll play, honestly, as a team, given the level of competition. But it was just a brutal, brutal, brutal start. To quote Richard Sherman, he's got to win this one. And he, can we talk about what I'm saying before we get to the Seahawks about the entire Legion of Boom standing on the sidelines like that one meme of the guy, at the hater at his funeral? Like, oh, yeah. they were...
Yeah,
they don't hide it at all. I mean, Doug Baldwin tweeting the GIF,
like, the sassy cheerleader, like, yeah,
the gymnast. I think I forget who it's. Lori, what was her name? She her. Anyways, I don't remember Olympics, but can you think of an example of a guy whose former teammates are so, like, this isn't just like, I don't know, Greg Jennings exactly. going after Rodgers. Yeah. This is a lot of players, and it's pretty stunning.
It's not a guy who's been that good in at that position. Like, normally...
Being hated, yeah.
Yeah, normally yeah. it's like you mentioned, like Greg Jennings or somebody like that. And still, it's they don't, like, galvanize around the quarterback or the team in that situation as much as they did around the organization. And trust me, guys don't like their teams. Like, no one really ever retires because they wanted to. No one ever gets paid as much money as they think they deserve. So for them to come out there and be like, yeah, we're on the Seahawks side. Like, they really don't like Russ. And I don't know him.
Yeah, I mean.
He just comes off as odd and corny, though. Like, wearing that tuxedo and just everything about him just is
to his
very
credit.
Intriguing.
He wore it after the game, too, which takes a big man to wear that outfit as your losing outfit, the Temptation-style tux.
You had to fly back on the plane and that.
Oh, my God. Okay. I swear I'm not coming out of the Seahawks game thinking we got something. Like, we're gonna, you know, I don't think they're a playoff team. But I also think that, and this was something like, you know, it's not... I guess should have been a little bit obvious before the season, they were never going to be one of the worst teams in the NFL. I saw, you know, and funny enough, by the way, I talked about this with Levitard today, all of the quote-unquote terrible teams kept it close this weekend, which might be a thing. There might just not be terrible teams in the NFL this year. The Texans, the Bears, the Falcons, the Giants, like the Commanders. I think those are, like, when we did our team draft, I believe those were the teams taken near the bottom, and they either won or looked decent and might reflect. I feel like this year there might, it just might be like a two-tier league where there's, like, the, you know, the Chiefs, the Chargers, et cetera, the really elite teams, and then kind of everybody else. And that's interesting, but and I would say that Seattle falls into that category. To me, offensively, it wasn't like fluky what we saw from Geno Smith. No. I mean, yes, thank you, because I think people were shocked. They're like, "What is happening?" It's like, no, like Geno's done this always. Like,
yeah.
He is an accurate quarterback. He stands tough in the pocket. He's got a little bit of wiggle to him. You know, he was making a few throws on the run too. He is not a terrible quarterback by any measure. And I think, you know, I don't think he's never, I think what we probably saw his best half of football play all season, honestly. Like, I don't, you know, but the idea that he can't run an efficient offense, in particular, I think Shane Waldron's offense, which is really well suited to what he does. Well, I think we saw that was proven wrong pretty quickly.
Yeah, they're going to be okay. And I mean, you can have a little bit of hope. Like, it's okay to have, I mean, the standings, they're number one. The 49ers, I don't know about their quarterback. The Cardinals are, like, there's a number of issues with that team, from the defense to the coach to the general manager to the quarterback. Like, there's lots of questions there. And the Super Bowl hangover combined with the missing parts in L.A., get a little hope. You guys might mess around and win the division. You know you're thinking it.
No, I'm not thinking you're thinking it. Stop it. The Rams are fine. Stop it. I'm not thinking it. I will say, I'm not zero people. Okay. This is going to be the most, like, homerist, saltiest sounding thing I'll say. And I don't mean it this way, but I would rather that Russell Wilson was the quarterback of the Seattle Seahawks. I think he is a better quarterback than Geno Smith. That said, it was kind of enjoyable to watch a normal offense. Like, I don't know. There's just something about, like, oh, the ball's coming out quickly and it's getting snapped quickly. And there's a lot of, like, short to intermediate routes that are suddenly available in this offense. They're using the tight ends. The special, well, he did have one, like, bizarrely incredible throw across his body. But for the most part, you know, we know that the special explosive plays are not going to be there. But the consistency was kind of nice. It was, like, normal. I don't know. It's like,
you want a Volkswagen and not a Lamborghini. It's not functional week to week. I feel you. You want to get to work on time. You don't ever want to be cool.
I'm like Ciara going to future to Russell Wilson, but the football version of that. Like, you know.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
I had my wild times. I'm ready to settle down. Oh, give me those 8-yard hitches and slants, man. I'm enjoying it. Give it to me.
Oh man.
I think Rashad Penny looked incredible as he left off. He's really special too. It's not just like his cuts and his vision, his patience, and then the explosiveness coming out of those cuts. It's all really, really good.
I mean, in the NFC in general, not just NFC West, it's kind of weak this year. Mess around, get hot, end up in a Super Bowl.
Is it surprising to you that Jamal Adams is lost for the season, but, like, it's not, like, a huge story today?
No. I mean, I guess it would have been a huge story if we didn't I mean, it would have been part of the story. But you know better than I do because you follow this team more closely than I do. But Jamal Adams was, like, a difference maker for a couple of games. But, like, he hasn't really had the positive impact on this team that I think the trade suggested that or the amount that they traded for suggested that he would. Like, he hasn't done things like Minkah Fitzpatrick is doing. And the Steelers, who was also traded for a huge sum. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, he feels like his coverage skills are not to the level that you would need him to be an impact player, say, like a Derwin James or something like that. Like, he's a big-ass safety, small-ass linebacker, like a pass rusher kind of guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it changes what they do defensively. Ryan Neal, I believe, is next in line to start for him. He's looked okay. But, you know, this is a very inexperienced secondary. And I will say, I think that, to me, was probably the biggest problem with Seattle yesterday, is you just saw that on display. I mean, they were starting rookies, cornerbacks. They got a Kobe Bryant. They got a Michael Jackson back there. Would you rather be... Oh, this is actually a fraught conversation. Never mind.
Exactly.
And let's talk about something else. I think that's, you know, this is a pass. I actually was surprised they didn't pick on them even more, but I thought Seahawks pass rush was, you know, was actually pretty impressive at points. Chen Nwosu, I thought, was probably the best player on the field defensively, who was their big pickup. But, you know, it's not an elite unit. Like, I think what we saw is there's some good players across the board, and I could see them getting better because they're young. You know, the rookie corners are going to get better. Tariq Woolen, who's the gigantic cornerback you guys saw defending Courtland Sutton. He's from UTSA. Like, it's crazy that he's even defending Courtland Sutton and held up reasonably well. But, you know, like, when I imagine them playing one of the truly high powered passing attacks in the NFL, that's where the dream starts to fall apart a little bit.
Well, I mean, I think the dream starts to fall apart a little bit. You ask him to do it every week. But I think the Broncos, from a talent standpoint, they fit the bill of truly high-powered offense. So, them not getting embarrassed out there is really encouraging and positive. And they're only going to get better. Like, they're going to have some bad weeks here or there. But generally, young players get better over the course of that first season and second season. So, this team... It's promising.
You're drinking the I
just tried to coax you into getting excited because it's so much.
I'm not getting coaxed. I've held back so much. I held back going into the game. I was like, we're gonna get crushed. I picked the Broncos in the Survivors League I told you about. I still have pretty low expectations. But for me, success this season is exactly what you described, which is young players looking better, like the rookie tackles who I thought. You know, showed a lot. Obviously, Cross got beat a little bit at the end there against Riley Chubb, who's a very good pass rusher. But, you could see a universe in which this is a football team next year that a good quarterback wants to be on. And
man, you already disrespected Gino. You writing them off.
Also,
you ain't getting no letters back.
What? Let me toss a take to you. This is the kind of take that is perfect for you. Let's take shop this, okay?
All right,
this is the first time I've used this take. Okay. Right now, my big takeaway, Dominique, coming from this weekend, is that the AFC is not just a bloodbath now, but going to be a bloodbath forever because it has Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, and freaking Justin Herbert, who were the three stars of the weekend from a quarterbacking perspective. And it kind of sucks, by the way, that not only are two of those teams in the same division, but that only one of them can go to the Super Bowl. If I'm Bryce Young or CJ Stroud, I pull an Eli.
Yeah.
I force my way to the NFC. I go to the Seahawks, team that is ready for me.
I love that. I mean, I generally player power. I'm with it. I hate the draft in general. Salary caps is a problem. So anything that players can pull an Eli or a John Elway, there is a history of doing this. It may not work so well for Bryce for a number of reasons, but good luck.
Listen. Seattle, that division's going to be winnable pretty soon.
Yeah.
We were just talking.
It's winnable this year.
It's winnable this year. I think the Rams are better than they looked week one, I will say. I think if I had to pick one overreaction, I think the Bills are just so good, and I think there's a little bit of a, we're under-recognizing the level of competition there.
Okay.
Okay, so wrapping this up, what are your expectations now for the Broncos based on this?
This doesn't change my expectations for the Broncos. I guess the hope is, or the expectation is that Nathaniel Hackett and his staff figure out a better way to handle these end-of-game situations. So it really sucks for this to happen in their first game because this is going to be hanging over him. If he has anything close to a slip-up, kind of like how Mike McCarthy was last year, we are going to be analyzing the hell out of your late-game situations.
I'd like to take shop another take.
All right.
How is there not, a person out there, given how much money these NFL teams have, how much they spend on, freaking long snappers make $1 million. I know that there's teams who have people who help with clock management, but what about a true mercenary, a closer who can come in and just really put the coach through the paces, take them to boot camp? I don't understand how this is still, even the Bengals, too, there are issues with clock management at the end of that game. I just don't understand how in 2022 there are still NFL teams who struggle with this stuff.
Well, the head coach is the guy who's going to be making these decisions. The head coach doesn't have a boss, and the head coach is allocating his time to the things that he thinks are most important. And, yeah, but they don't think it's important. What they think is important is the stuff that got them this job, is designing these plays and coaching the players and all that sort of stuff. I fully agree with you. either like give this responsibility to someone else. Like the processes aren't hard. Like lots of businesses have processes to account for much more complicated things than this. So like you should absolve yourself of that responsibility. And like if you are in that role, if I'm Nathaniel Hackett, it's like, all right, what I do is call plays, which he's never done before, but I do that now. I'm going to be prepared to call for the next down. There are three potential scenarios. I'm going to have those in my mind. I'm going to call my play. And if there's someone else who's responsible for calling timeouts and deciding clock management, then they can butt in. I got my play called. And we can have these conversations throughout the course of the game. You can go through all these scenarios ahead of time. And to me, it doesn't feel like it's that hard. I haven't done it before. It's obviously difficult. It's obviously challenging because too many like NFL coaches mess it up. But it seems so simple and so obvious. Like Peyton Manning is in the Manning cast. Well, I mean, I shouldn't even bring Peyton. Everybody. I was at
everybody,
home like
well, not
at
home,
in the hotel room was like,
screaming.
What are you doing? Really? 64?
We couldn't even debate it on First Take. That is the litmus test for consensus in this country.
Oh, gosh. Oh,
all right. After the break, let's take a quick break and let's come back and talk about things we liked and didn't like.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/MinaShow, MinaShow, today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. com/MinaShow.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
All right, Dominique, I don't like calling people losers. That's not true. I love calling people losers. But I don't like calling people I don't know losers. So this segment is now called Winners and Woofs. Like not woof in a good way, but like woof in a, like a woof way. So, you know, woof can be, woof is one of the words I think where intonation can really change. Like you can, woof can mean so many different things. Like, you know, I don't even know how to describe this phenomenon. When you see an attractive person walking down the street, perhaps somebody might go, woof.
So who is this somebody and why don't they go back to the 1950s?
It's like a cat caller, but the dog version. Woof.
I don't think I've ever heard anybody do that.
Woof. Woof. Am I making you uncomfortable? Woof. All right.
No, you're not. You're making me laugh.
Mine is the negative one, which is woof, which is not the way I typically use it. Let's start with the winners, though. Who's your winner from the weekend? A winner.
A winner. Tua.
Hmm.
Yeah. I mean.
It's a little interesting.
This was the best possible version. Like, it's he wasn't great.
Okay.
But he was good. And the reason why he's a winner is because he won, and he has time to improve and grow into this. Like, the the worst scenario is him being good and them losing, because no matter what, the criticism is going to come down on him, right? I think that's a bad outcome. I don't like your face. You don't like my winner.
I don't agree with your analysis, but this isn't you're negging him. That's not a winner.
I'm not negging him. I think that he was okay, which is a start. That he was under the most of, I mean, I guess Jalen Hurts and him are like quarterbacks under the most amount of pressure this year. And it didn't sink him. He made some really impressive throws. I was really impressed with the offense, the plays that they designed for him. He was not perfect, but he has something to build on. Like, this to me was an interesting game for him and a winner and encouraging going forward. It wasn't perfect, but it was a start. No? You want all
no, no,
winners?
I,
okay. Patrick
no, no,
Mahomes.
No, 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 no.
We're done.
I want to talk about the Dolphins because I think to me, what I saw was success for them this season would be kind of Tua basically doing what Jimmy Garoppolo did in the Niners offense, yeah. And that's what he looked like. He looked like a very like accurate facilitator who largely kept the ball out of harm's way. You know, wasn't really much of a playmaker, but you don't need your quarterback to be a playmaker to a point. When you have playmakers all over the field, and holy crap, right? Like, we spent all summer talking about the speed of the Dolphins offense, but seeing it on display in real time was something else. Seeing Jalen Waddle house that slant. By the way, Mike McDaniel, real winner, going for a 4th-and-7. Loved that. Loved, by the way, the whole game, I thought he was fantastic. I don't know how you felt, but it seemed to me like he had the Patriots defense's number, had the right call for every moment, did a great job of taking advantage of some of their coverage looks, and and also to some extent mitigating the pressure they were sending as well. But as far as, the Dolphins offense, like, that looks like one of the best skill groups in the NFL.
I mean, they only scored one touchdown, but I guess maybe I would modify my winner to all the Dolphins. Like, the Dolphin fan base, the Dolphins are big winners this weekend. They didn't blow out New England, but I thought this was, like, for a debut, this was an encouraging start.
Let me spin zone it a little bit, too. I feel when I was watching, I was struck by I felt like I had not spent enough time talking about the Dolphins defense because they were fantastic.
Yes.
And I think what was amazing is they've got superstars like obviously Xavier Howard. You cannot throw on Javon Holland, I think, is fantastic at safety. But they also have like role players at every level. I was thinking about this, like Zach Sealer is like incredible. Their defensive tackle, he's like a really, really good defensive tackle. Jalen Phillips making plays, you know. It's from top to bottom, they pretty much ran it back this year. They didn't make a ton of changes, but watching them, even you know, after Brian Flores moved on, I was kind of like, oh, they didn't really need to. Like, they're still really, really good. They're still really, really confusing. The games that they play up front are utter chaos, and the Patriots were just totally, totally unprepared for even, which was that also was shocking. If that they could be a woof, but the Dolphins are the winners to me, rather than perhaps Tua, because they look like a playoff team. Like I would say now they're firmly in my AFC wild card bracket.
Yeah, after week one, I had them there before week one, but there were some question marks that I think got answered. The expectation of the defense returning to be as good as they were last year, like I believe that was possible, but losing Brian Flores and generally, as anyone who listens to this podcast knows, that defenses can fluctuate. A lot more than offense can from year to year. So there were still some questions around that. Seeing them come out and play the way that they did, albeit against defensive coaches coordinating the offense, against a legitimate NFL offense, they played really well, scored a touchdown, and just kind of dominated. So that is the recipe. That's the San Francisco recipe. Get a lot of playmakers, play really good defense, and say, hey, quarterback, don't blow this. And Tua didn't blow it. He seemed to know where the ball should go. He was decisive in anticipating and made passes. He's not going to do one of those mutant things that we see from those other AFC quarterbacks that you're talking about, but that might be enough for now. And this talk about locations that might be attractive for a quarterback to go, That's another one that could be, I guess it would be in Josh Allen's division.
Bryce Young, TJ, listening. Don't go to the Dolphins. You don't want the Dolphins. Force your way to the Seahawks.
Yes, the weather's much better in Seattle.
You
want to
be in the NFC.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to be in Josh Allen's division. Humping people on the field.
It really is like a crazy time with like those three quarterbacks. Like you call them mutants. Like they routinely make the wildest throws, especially the next day when you get to see them all from end zone view, and you're like, that doesn't make sense. Like, literally nothing about the way the physics, the way the ball, and then they're just lost to the sands of time. We just move on. It's like a, like a 1 p.m. game, and it'll be like Patrick Mahomes, you know, side arming it through his legs with one hand over his eye to, and then we just like forget about it. It's such a weird time to be alive.
I made this, I kind of stumbled onto this realization on my great, great podcast.
Check it out.
Yeah, you should. That it feels like kind of like when the iPhone came out and like Russell Wilson is like a Kodak camera and like Dak Prescott, like these guys who... And I guess Russell's better than Dak. But in general, like, what Dak is like what everybody wanted. It's like a stable, good quarterback. And like, okay, there was like one mutant in the league every now and then that could transcend. But then all these guys came in the league, and they're like the iPhones. Like, they do so much better than these other guys that they made these players who were assets before and, like, the comment before, or at least the player you're looking for before was like a franchise quarterback. And Dak Prescott is like the definition of a franchise quarterback. Yes, he's a franchise quarterback. These other guys, these three names that you're naming, I would throw Lamar Jackson in there also.
Yep, Lamar.
They are something different than franchise quarterbacks. And it's just not right for them all to be here at the same time. It just changed the league and the expectation changed. And I'm sure it goes back to like, how young we're coaching them and like us, the evolution of offenses to not be only looking for like 6'5" guys who stand in the pocket, bringing in athletes who were like Josh Allen may not have played quarterback 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. They might have tried to turn him into a rush in or a tight end, probably more likely. So like the league has changed so much, and it feels like having a franchise quarterback is almost not enough anymore. You got to have one of these mutant iPhones.
I would be so frustrated if I was the, I don't know, Nokia in your, like the flip phone. Who's the most flip phony quarterback in the NFL? Who's like true neutral?
It's Kirk Cousins, right? It's always Kirk Cousins.
Kirk Cousins, right. He's like good. He plays on time. Yeah. He's accurate. He's mechanically sound, but he ain't gonna create like these guys. Like he's not gonna.
What is Carson Wentz like? Because Carson Wentz has the ability to be the iPhone every now and then, but he also is like a rotary phone from time to time. He's just like a phone. You got an iPhone, but you didn't want to spring for the good provider. You like getting a cheap provider. Like, he's got all the tools, but...
Yeah, every now and then the call comes through crystal clear, but then half the time, like,
drop.
He's holding it up to the sky. okay, well, you mentioned Kirk Cousins, so that's a segue to my winner. I feel like other than the freak quarterbacks, the mutants, as you called them, Justin Jefferson is the winner of the weekend. Because... he just looks simply uncoverable. And, you know, it's not surprising. He was awesome last year. I think before we even saw what the scheme looked like, there was the assumption that in the Cooper Kupp role, he would be awesome, given that, you know, he was so good in the slot at LSU and that he's so complete. He's really like, I think part of the reason why there's been talk about him for some time as being potentially the best wide receiver in the NFL, even with Kupp and Adams, is that he can literally do everything. I think Adams can do everything too, but the length, the speed, the, you know, just contested catchability, yards after the catch, the route running, his like ability to use leverage, his releases, it's all there. Yeah, he's the total package. And then, you know, to see it on display, to see how good Kevin O'Connell was at getting him open, moving him around, the motion, the stacks, the way he was hiding him, getting all the matchups he wanted. as a defensive coordinator, it's a nightmare, like, watching that. And it was interesting to watch from the broadcast angle at first, because he's now one of those broadcasts, those players who are on broadcast, you just don't know what the hell's going on. Because you're like, yeah. All of a sudden, there's like not a guy around him for 10 yards. Mm-hmm. And again, when you don't see what's happening and the route he's running, it's just so immensely frustrating, probably, if you're rooting for the other team. But I feel like that's going to be the situation all season long.
Yeah, you nailed it. I was really coming in here ready to break it all down and explain to you why Justin Jefferson was so wide open. And it wasn't because the Packers didn't know he was good, or the Packers were bad or stupid, or their players or whatever. Like, the play design was ingenious, Kevin O'Connell. And to be able to, like, they were in a cover four a lot. And so when you see the highlights, you, like, see a linebacker trying to tackle him. And you're like, what the hell are they doing? They got a linebacker covering them? Or you see a safety trying to run with him. You're like, damn, they're dumb. He just had a big play, and now they got Savage or Amos trying to run with him. But no, when you rewatch the film, you can see the motions and stack. Like, they're in cover four. They find ways to put him in position to force you to either, like, corrupt your coverage, or he has to be guarded by a linebacker. Or you just have to stop running. You have to run man all game and just lock Alexander on him or something, which then exposes everyone else who's not comfortable with playing man all game. Like, there are guys who, and you and I talk about this a lot, is like, what you need to be good on offense or defense in general is, like, you need one thing that you can rely on, be it a play or a player, and then everything builds off of that. So that's Justin Jefferson. He's so good that you're going to have to contort yourself to stop him. And if you do stop him, everything else is breaking down.
How many times when they were in quarters did Kirk Cousins just target him in the flat and he was able to pick up an additional 5+ yards because of his speed and his ability to modulate his speed? It's a nightmare. There were times, I will say, where the Packers zone did not look sound. I think one of them was maybe it was like the deep over where they were playing.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And I was like, what the hell's going on here? Yeah, somebody done messed up. But I want to go back to what you just mentioned, which is the issue of man. Because coming out of this game, I think there was a lot of people had questions. Okay, you have Jair Alexander, who's one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL, who can play man and zone equally well. Right. Why don't you just man him up? And afterwards, I think it was Matt LaFleur, not Joe Barry, one of them was like, well, then, as you pointed out, we just can't, you know, we're a zone defense, but two, like, everyone else can't just play man all game long. And I was wondering, like, going forward, if you're a defense watching this and a defense that has a number one cornerback, like, for example, Los Angeles. I don't know if they're playing, but I think that's a really good it's a similar defense that plays a ton of zone and has a cornerback in Jalen Ramsey, who we would probably put in that same tier. How would you approach this matchup?
Well, Jalen Ramsey plays everywhere.
Yeah.
So you can lock Jalen Ramsey and still play zone. Because if you motion Justin Jefferson, so Jalen's at the corner spot. Assume Justin's outside at the corner also. Jalen's there, and he's playing quarters. If you motion him down, Jalen can go with and then become the nickel. Assuming you're a nickel, then the nickel can become the corner. Or Jalen can motion down and become the safety, and the safety drop down to be the nickel or the linebacker. So it's possible with a player like that. But again, what you're doing there is you're having to adjust four players.
Right. What you do.
Based off of one motion.
Your whole identity.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, like, you can do that once. It might work. If they motion 10 times in the game, I guarantee you two or three of those times, somebody's going to blow it. And that's the point of having a player like this. There's, you know, and if they blow it and Kirk Cousins hits it, that's 6 points. And that's all you need.
And the Vikings have Adam Thielen and KJ Osborne, who are very good wide receivers, who, by the way, I tweeted this, were on the field the whole time, which is a very Rams thing to do also, is to have your same three wide receivers play every down so you can go up tempo, so you don't have to substitute them, because they can do everything. And it's going to be a freaking problem, man. It's going to be a problem.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now, get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th, one-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, let's get through these woofs pretty quickly. I'll go first. I'm taping this from Bristol, Connecticut, so I'm actually contractually obligated. I haven't hit my quota of Cowboys talk today. Hopefully this accomplishes that. My woof is Jerry and Stephen Jones. Yeah. It's not Dak Prescott. It's not the Cowboys. It's not even Mike McCarthy. All of those aspects of the team were bad as well. Dak had a bad game before he got hurt. There's skill players, whatever. But I was just struck by how ill-prepared this team was from a roster standpoint for this season with the skill players that they had. And then the fact that they didn't have a better backup quarterback than Cooper Rush, who frankly is, I would say, maybe famous last words, this can be come back to bite me if he like goes on a roll, but I don't think he's good. I think he is a bottom 10 backup quarterback in this league. He's extremely bad when pressured, by the way. People are like, well, I beat the Vikings last year. Over the course of his career, when Cooper Kupp is pressured, do you know what his QBR is?
Cooper Rush.
I keep saying
probably like one.
It's five. So it's close. He gets sacked at an extraordinarily high rate. When he's pressured, he's sacked 30% of the time. Dominic, I don't know if you've been noticing, the Cowboys offensive line, it's not a strength anymore. So yeah. I just don't see this working out. But more importantly, like there's nothing they can do. People have been saying, oh, they should go get this guy. No, there's none of the good teams are going to trade them their backup quarterbacks. Like, I don't know, a Baltimore with a Tyler Huntley. Yeah. And Dallas now, if Dak is back out for just 4 or 5 games or whatever, they're not going to make a dumb trade. This is something they should have addressed in the offseason, and they didn't, like so many other things.
They were the worst offense in the league by EPA this week one. Talk about bad. That is really bad. And you can't blame one person. And then you compound it by having Jerry Jones presumably rushing Dak Prescott back from injury, which is like, talk about wolf. That is just, I don't know if he knows something about medicine that none of us know. They got some special elixir down there. But 6 to 8 weeks is 6 to 8 weeks. Just because you want him back doesn't mean that he's going to be back. And it could prolong it, make things worse. And what it's not going to do is, like, improve you guys' chances this season. Right. It just seems like almost a blessing in disguise to have Dak hurt. Just go ahead and ride this out the best you can and start rebuilding and setting for next year while getting more experience than other guys. Rushing Dak back, I think, is the absolute worst thing that they could do.
Could not agree more. And yeah, I mean, we were talking about a quarterback at the beginning of this podcast who was rushed back from injury or rushed himself back. I don't know, but it was ugly and it was a mistake. Russell Wilson,
they were worse. Anyway, so. They were worse than the 49ers, who played in a bowl of soup. Like by EPA, they're negative 17. The 49ers and the Rams were both negative 12. And that is incredibly bad.
All right, who's your wolf?
My wolf was Nathaniel Hackett, but we did that already, so we can go with the Falcons for choking it away. That's pretty wolfy. It was fun, though. Exciting.
Do you come out of that with any, like, I know they choked it, but, like, do you come out of that with any enthusiasm for the Falcons?
Yeah. I mean, it was encouraging. Arthur Smith storming out was funny, but it was encouraging because they had hold of this game and they had interesting and fun offense, which...
Yeah.
It's nice. They have a lot of talent on that, or playmakers at least on that side of the ball. But I don't think anyone was expecting them to be competitive in that. But then once they had it in hand, like them and the Texans also just kind of squandered an opportunity, which was embarrassing. But yeah, the Colts could fall into the wolf category.
That's a big wolf for me. Yeah.
I thought they were
like
good.
Biggest letdowns.
Yeah, and Matt Ryan's one of your guys. Like, I feel like...
I'm giving him another week before I address what we saw from Matt Ryan. Giving it another week.
That was bad.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just like a lot of, I think, the Niners being a letdown, clearly.
Yeah. I mean, I can explain away the Niners letdown. There is certainly a lot to be concerned about there with Trey Lance's decision-making, but... They're playing conditions that they will never, ever play it in again.
Awesome. Well, here's my big concern about the Niners. I'm about to talk about this on NFL Live. I don't think Trey Lance played well. I thought Justin Fields looked a lot better than him. But the Niners offensive line stinks.
I was shocked.
And that's not something that is about the conditions. Like we talked a lot about the center. And, you know, Jake Brendel, his name is, right? And, you know, moving on from Alex Mack and whatnot. But, like, I thought outside of Trent Williams from the left guard on, this is not a good group anymore. I don't know when that happened. Like, it happened real fast. And, like, it's going to be a real problem for Lance, who we know holds on to the football a long time. And if they can't, with Elijah Mitchell's now, if they can't execute any of the stuff with him in the run game, like the design run game either, it's going to really constrict what they do on offense because so much of that offense is dependent on, you know, having that sort of multiplicity.
Yeah, I thought they were good on offensive line, to be completely honest with you, and maybe I just was getting hung up on looking
in this
at
game?
Williams only. No.
Oh, you meant
coming
before
into
this,
this
before, yeah, yeah,
coming
yeah,
into
yeah,
this
yeah,
season,
yeah.
I consider their offensive line not a weakness, maybe not a strength, but not a weakness. But maybe I was just thinking about Trent Williams going in motion and plowing through people in playoff games. But yeah, they
made the Bears defense, like DeMarcus Robinson, I think his name is. I forget. He was absolutely toasting McGlinchey in the right style. I don't know. So yeah, the Bears, man. Bears.
My Bears. Love them.
Your Bears.
They had a week one Super Bowl too. Let's keep it real, Bears fan. Y'all
no,
know
no,
that.
Not on this podcast. I'm not trying to anger them. You can anger Bears fans on your own podcast.
Come on over to my podcast if you want to get mad.
All right. Thank you, Dominique.
If you want to get honest. I'm sorry.
We'll be back next week. Like I said, let us know in the reviews how you feeling about the new format, what kind of stuff you want. But this has been fun.
Awesome. Let's wrap.